And welcome to the Collective Potential Podcast. I'm Emily Paulo, and I have a really big question for you before we start with our topic today. And it's, how are we going? How's this podcast for you? And I'm talking like we've hit 20 almost, have we?
20 people total.
20 podcasts we've done so far, Jeremy.
Yeah, cool.
And so we want to know what people are thinking. You know, should we change it a bit, or what are you loving about it? I don't know.
What are you liking? What are you not liking? Like, what's working for you? Is anything inspiring you? Is anything depleting you?
Like, we love having the conversations that are really authentic and open, and where people can relate to emotionally. That kind of you listen to us expand our emotional awareness, and then you can resonate with that and apply it to your own lives. Hmm. But is that what you want, or do you want something that's a bit more question and answer based, a bit more structured?
Yeah.
Or a combination of both. Who knows? Trying our best. This is for you.
Yes.
So let us know. Write it in the comments.
Send us an email.
Thanks. Heroes. We're all bloody heroes at heart, aren't we? Aren't we? But it depends how you want to look at a hero. They are put up on soapboxes and they speak to us. And at the same time, they can be questionable.
You're my hero.
Thank you. Today is going to be a great conversation about who are the heroes of this world and what makes a hero.
Connection. Wow. Real world. People everywhere. Collective potential. We're all the same.
Oh, that's nice. I like that.
Hey, Jez.
Yeah. Yes.
When you were younger... What kind of superhero did you want to be?
Cool question. I wanted to be a football player.
You, Ryan?
I wanted to be a football player hero. Probably
like as in football because you're
soccer, in England. Yep, like England. So just playing well and defending well. I liked defending and doing runs down the wing and then shooting. And it gave me a good feeling to being a part of a team, the sense of camaraderie. I felt like that was a team. Team can be a hero, and also you can... Yeah, I just like being in that environment.
Because there's something about that, isn't it, when it comes to sport? Like when you're inside there, I'm imagining little Jeremy in a little white outfit or, you know, soccer outfit, whether it be red, blue, whatever colour you are.
Yeah.
But you're...
It was yellow.
Yeah, yellow. There
as
we
a,
go.
As the Jets I play for.
There we go.
The Jets.
But you're inside this, what is it, a game of achievement? Like you have to achieve something. So who is the standout?
It's a stage, I guess, isn't it? A stage to... do things that push your boundaries, give yourself a chance to grow. But nowadays my idea of a hero is someone that confronts and conquers their own fears. To your childhood.
Hands down, man. I would agree with that.
Yeah.
Yep. Let's get back to that. I'm a weird, I remember as a kid, I'd want to be whatever I watched at the time. So if I watch Karate Kid, I wanted to play karate.
We love Daniel-san.
Daniel-san. Or a big one was I really wanted to be Harry Potter.
Of course.
I'm still working
There's
hard.
A lot of people listening to this podcast, and I have no doubt.
Magic. It's power. It's a sense of power, isn't it?
I think many people my age reading that would be like, yeah, that's sick. And also because Hermione was... fell in love with Hermione.
Of course she fell in love.
And you would suit Hermione.
Yeah.
I hope so. If
Emma Watson is a... babe. It is Emma Watson, isn't it?
Yeah.
I feel like she's a new woman now compared to what she was as a child.
Mm.
Which is, of course, is what she is.
A woman.
But the shit she does is dope.
I loved when I was a hero, Whitney Houston was my hero.
Awesome. Love it.
I loved her album. And in the 80s, you know, I'm 1981. And so I probably just saw her album in the late 80s come out. And she just looks like this queen in the outfit.
Yeah.
And then she'd always come on stage and she would just sing, you know, oh, I want to dance with somebody. And she just had this amazing energy.
Power.
Yeah, she had power. She was gorgeous. And to me, she was a black woman that was really famous. So you never really saw that on Australian television.
Mm.
So I was really pumped to see somebody that I really wanted to be a singer too.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, when I was little.
Yeah.
So it is... who you relate to.
You can
to.
Sing. What's your modern day? Sorry, right?
I was going to say it's kind of like Beyonce now.
Yeah.
Like people love so Beyonce.
Mm. It's power. I reckon power is a bit of a common thread between all the three of us. Like someone
Absolutely.
That's empowered and shows a power of their own, because that inspires you to find your own power and you see the thread in their power.
100%.
How does that work on the hero's journey, Em? It's like the people that have gone there and they've brought something back.
Well, Joseph Campbell, who is a he's into mythology, and so he researched.
He's been dead for many years.
But what I love about his framework, and Google it if you haven't heard, he talks about that the hero in every story across every medium, whether it be a book, a movie, actually has these traits or these values that you see in yourself, but it's actually stages. So, like, in a way, the hero always goes through a hardship. Yep. That's the underlying story, that no matter what, they have something that they want to achieve when they set out on this hero's journey that they're on. So if I took why I loved Whitney Houston, she still was a black woman who made it, you know, and we really idolize that. In so whether it's a soccer player, they still have to push through and sense of achievement. And, you know, Harry Potter, I mean, he's got a lot stacked up against him.
Yeah, exactly.
In the witchy woo world.
Isn't it? The threshold for me is the most, once you're in, there's a circle it's represented in, isn't it? If you Google it, you'll see it. But yeah, it's that threshold where before you take the leap, you hesitate, go back, and then you take the leap, and then the rest is kind of in the cave or the darkness, slaying the demon or dragon, and then coming out and telling your tribe is loosely it, I believe, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And that's sort of, he talks about it being, there's a call to adventure, and everyone has to leave their tribe in as a hero, and we all set out, and that could be if you leave high school and you got to go to university, that could be that your call to adventure is, you keep getting told you have a passion or a purpose and you want to follow it, and so you just go after it.
Yeah.
That's your call to adventure as a hero.
They're usually quite ordinary people too. Like, you'll notice, like, Harry Potter or I like, the easiest example of this is The Lord of the Rings. So when the hobbits leave, they just, they like their normal life, and then they leave and they have this giant adventure.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that it's just normal people when they start to, and I think that's why we can relate to it.
Chronicles of Narnia.
Narnia.
Yeah.
All right. I'll throw it out then. What has been your call to adventure in your life? The one that's shaped the start. And remember that the call to adventure can be very micro. You can have them in day to day, but they can have a large impact or a huge impact on you, but sometimes they can be so standard because it is a tragedy, or others it could be that it's actually awoken something in you. It could be quite positive too, like you've won something and so it's changed the direction.
So mine, imagine a 18-year-old me, I'm in first year uni, and I kind of went to uni because I liked podcasts and like Hamish and Andy as a kid, and I was like, I want to do that.
And you are.
I know, which is awesome. But I was... It was uni holidays and I was sitting there on Facebook doing who knows what, just being mindless. And then pops up on my newsfeed, are you interested in international relations from Swinburne, which is where I went. And I was like, sure, I can be interested in international relations. So I applied. It was for a youth organization called Global Voices. And I somehow got in and ended up representing my uni at the UN.
Cool.
And then that, going to the Middle East and meeting Nobel Prize winners and hanging out delegates. And I think,
how long were you there for?
12 days. But we also went to Canberra and met like all the politicians, like Kevin Rudd and stuff.
Mate, because what is that? Because that takes you from being a kid at uni to on a global scale. You're sitting in the UN meeting Nobel
Prize.
Thank you.
I think a lot of it was there.
That's a pretty cool call.
When you're wearing, because I also bought a suit to go over, and there was this intense respect that everyone has for everyone there, because I think when you go to a conference in the middle of the desert, that's a global UN conference, people don't know your background, and it's just this kind of a respect.
Mm.
And to someone, I never really had that kind of respect before, or people
absolutely
were just so eager to get to know you, and it was just awesome.
There is a point, isn't there, like when you take a risk, grace kind of rewards you, or so there's a kind of a graceful action. I found is a theme for anyone I've seen, and that's a good example.
That's such a beautiful way of putting it. Yeah. The grace rewards you.
Well, the universe rewards you or whatever, but it feels like a graceful thing because it's a gift that comes from nowhere. That sounds like what your UN experience was like.
Exactly, and it was something I think about is I got told that the reason I got it was because I was humble. And then again, that's a value like
cool.
It ends up happening is it's just like appreciation. And when I did my application, I was told that many of the other people that went in very strong, like I need, you know, you, I'm the right person for this. Whereas the way I applied was, hey, I don't know a lot about the subject, but I want to, and I want to help people. And then that's why I got it.
Great.
And that's kind of, I think that's a theme where it's like,
you presented the space you want to move into kind of thing. Or
In like just being open to experience and humble about it. And I think a lot of these moments, called actions, they're not things that I pushed for, but when they came up, I took them.
Yeah.
Because I like this is what I think I've spoken to you about this, Em, before. It's like the difference between pushing so hard for a goal and it just popping up. Like the balance between those, and then that's kind of how things happen. Because I realize these like call to action or adventures from the hero's journey, can't control them. They're just things that kind of pop up. You know, you might meet someone randomly.
It's funny, isn't it? It's more about the intent, right? Isn't it? Like then, because you can't really say, "Oh, this is exactly where I want to go." The UN conference, or this is exact podcast I wanted to make.
So, because does that mean that you wanted to be in spaces like that that helped to change the world? Did you have an intention behind, even though it turned out as being?
I think that
the UN
that was one of the big ones that grew it. That's what started. That gave me the confidence to actually start growing things.
Well, and I guess you wouldn't if you didn't if you applied for it, right?
Then through that experience, I met you guys. Like I wouldn't have, I met Al Jeffrey and who introduced me to you guys, and then so it's that whole like domino effect of just being open to things.
And your life is happily ever you've lived happily ever after.
And so far,
since you've met
so
us,
so far so good.
No,
and it is a bit, would you say, Ryo, a bit of you didn't really know what you wanted when you saw something you liked.
Yeah, I was a floater.
Yeah.
So all through high school, I wasn't, people meet me now, I'm very passionate about things and interested in things. Whereas back there, a year before, actually even then, I was probably addicted to video games.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the catalyst that took me from being someone that wasn't very confident into going, oh, you've had that respect and this experience and like it was that confidence. Does that make sense?
Mm.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense.
But that's one of those experiences that just shifted
my
mindset.
And that's what it's like. A hero has to answer the call. So whether it be Whitney again, she answered the call of being a singer to stand up on the stage and take a risk over and over and over again. And yours? Grace delivered that to her.
Yeah. And yours was...
Do you know, I was trying to think about it without thinking about it. When I was younger, I used to say my call to adventure was the death of my parents, really, was my dad.
Right.
Because really, but I feel like that's really evolved now. It's like a different, that was an old call to adventure. Because if my dad hadn't passed away, I wouldn't have started to think about how I want to be remembered and meet, you know, Jim Steins and get a part of self-development work, which is what I do now. But I feel like my call to adventure, honestly, I hope I don't sound like a wanker.
Well, there's more than one though.
Yeah.
So like
the next big one that has been of recent was being flown, much like you, over to an amazing opportunity to go to Richard Branson's Necker Island.
So cool.
Isn't it? Mm. Like, come on.
That's great.
Because that molded something in my mind. It was like, I never intended that. I think that's what really excited me about what you said before. I never intended to be sitting next to Richard Branson at dinner or like having this amazing opportunity to listen to some of the world's most global people from change.org or Brené Brown. These are people I really admire, and be sitting at a dinner table with them. You know, even when I got there, I was crying because on the first day I was like, who the fuck am I? Mm. To be sitting around these humans in a place that gets so revered. And I just was crying because I was like, I can't believe I'm doing it. So
amazing.
It was enough to make me go, I know it's just a dude who lives on an island and he's got these other people around them. But it was enough to make me, maybe I'm still working it out. The call to adventure was, he said to me, you cannot fail. When I told him about how I want to create events that ignite change on an individual level, let alone a community. And there was something that he said, it was almost a moment, but it was, we need to connect more, we need to collaborate more, we need to have better community. And when he said you cannot fail, I was like, oh.
He's given you purpose.
Because he's known for being that person that constantly fails and then does it again, keeps going.
Right.
So it just was enough to create that in me of don't ever give up.
Yeah.
This is a symbol of people recognize you and your belief about doing personal change work enough to send you over there. You know, that was a $50,000 project.
Mm.
So does that make sense? That Amazing. Was my call to be like, just keep going. You're pioneering something here with Collective Potential, and though it's not going to transform everybody in Australia, it's enough to make you not give up hope.
But I would say that is was that the call to adventure, or was it before that and that was just the grace once you took your adventure? So I imagine there would have been harder times where you took a risk, like from doing a job you didn't want, for example, and then creating
Do you know
company.
What it is? Because it's quite difficult to keep doing a project without any money or any support other than your own meandering thoughts. I believe this is needed. I believe this is needed. And so, yeah, that was the hardship.
Mm.
And to be sitting there and going, cool, I can keep going.
Mm.
And no matter what, I'll never be back on Necker Island again. I won't. It was not even about Richard Branson. It was about that because I kept going, I got rewarded for it too.
Mm, mm.
Does that
yeah, mean? That's what I think. Yeah. I think you keep going was what made you, was your call to action rather
100%
than
spot on.
Going to Branson. Because once you get, say, yes to that trip, that's pretty easy.
Mm.
I mean, you know, like it's a gift.
Mm.
Right. I mean, yeah. I'm sure it's not totally easy, but like I think personally for me, the hard part was the hustle and believing in your dream and grinding. That's when, and before all that is your call to it.
What was your first, when you first go, this is my dream, what was your first call, not call to action, what was the first action you took towards that? What was the first step?
I just did lots of different projects, like probably starting a band and playing and then building a website and creating shows for us and writing songs and managing the whole thing. And then doing that with a radio station and then try to compete with like massive corporates and being more innovative than them when I was at uni, and then writing a thesis on developing multimedia for the music distribution. All those little things were, I kind of always is excited by pushing myself really. I wanted to be fueled off my passion for my life. I didn't want to do anything but that. It scared the shit out of me looking at big buildings and seeing people up there in cubicles doing things they don't like for 8 hours a day. I was like, I wanted to have fun for a living, and then, but also, I more than that, I think deep, that was all I knew I wanted, and I had plenty of naysayers, but I just, I wanted to make that happen, and I believe I could make it happen, because I see other people making it happen, and so I just did it again, and again, and again, and again, with different projects, experimenting with different things, and then once I realized why I liked that, it was because I felt joy, and I felt from that space of feeling joy or smiles or happy or laughter, I could be in a better position to create or do better in the world. And I feel like that's what my work, by me putting that energy into it, does for other people. And then there's two things that jump out to me that as the grace moments. The first one was when I did my radio show in the UK after a concert with Blink-182. I've told this story before, but Mark Hopper seeing me interviewing his band, and I told him like how like they inspired me, Blink inspired me to create this radio show or radio station. Like we went pretty hard. And then he, after the show, he saw me sing along to every song and then called me out and gave me his bass. So that was that moment where it was so overwhelming that like I was like, it felt like at the time when I was Christian and I still believe now, it was like a real graceful act from the universal God. And then the second one was when I got to Australia, and I was hustling for work for about 8 months without getting any job. And then I got a crappy job that I didn't love. Then I landed a job with working with Hamish and Annie that evolved into exclusively for them and just with them in a capacity that is dreamy for both, for mutually dreamy. I mean, like they're happy with what I do.
I love mutually dreamy.
Yeah. I mean, like, I say that because
they're
happy with me. I don't know if I'm dreamy for them, but they're happy with me.
I just imagine them go to bed. It's like, man, how good is chance?
Yeah, definitely not mutually dreamy. So that was the worst thing. I'm it's a dream for me to be doing it.
Yeah.
But that's one I've held on for the last 9 years, because it's like, that was, I wanted to work with someone of the energy like Mark Hoppers and Tom DeLonge had on stage, where they're just mucking around, didn't give a fuck, had fun, were best mates. And then that's Heyman and to a T. So, yeah, like that's where it felt like I didn't see them at all. And that's where I reckon it's really interesting and important when you're finding your dream, not to attach yourself to one particular thing, but more attach yourself to,
I think,
your intention, why. Your why.
Joseph Campbell also talks about, remember that famous quote that he has? Follow your bliss and doors will open where they were once closed.
No, where they were once closed.
Yeah, and so the idea is, if you answer the call to adventure, so go after working hard, you know, the social change projects I wanted to be a part of, creating, you know, all of this stuff, that's me following my bliss. And so up turns Grace, Richard Branson, for you, it was those sort of things that gets handed to you. I really believe in that. Mm. And so many people stop and refuse the call to adventure, and so they don't get any signals, or they don't get any rewards in ways that they never expected.
Mm.
So it kind of like, it's like cyclical. It comes back on them if they don't.
Yeah.
Just on a, like a little experiment. Like when you were younger and you were talking to people and they asked, what did you do? And then you got to talk to them this stuff you're so happy about doing and so passionate about. What was their reaction?
Usually you're dreaming, you're in the get your head out of the clouds.
Really?
For me it was, yeah.
Interesting.
Well, what was yours?
Look, I grew up really supported, I think. Yep. My mom and dad were completely supportive of whatever I wanted to do. Even before she left, she said, well, as in passed away, she said to my auntie, Mum just knew whatever you were going to do, you were going to be able to do it. So, and I think that comes from her. So even my friends just knew that I was. Yeah.
Cause
I think I'm pretty lucky.
I think how this works is when people go, like, what are you passionate about? And you say, well, you know, I'm building a apartment building for young people where we can live sustainably. And they go, wow, that's cool. But then eventually you talk to someone that goes, oh, yeah, I know someone that you might want to talk to. And because you're so passionate, they want to give you that opportunity.
Mm. Yeah.
Like when I first met Em, she's like, oh. And I was like, she's like, what do you love? And I told her about how I used to love Hamish and Andy. Mm. And then she was like, oh, I know Jez.
Mm.
And then that might be one of the reasons why this podcast started, because Em made the connection. I don't know, but it's like
you're
passionate
in
about something.
Whoa. Em, this is a fucking bread and butter, this shit. Yeah.
But yeah, like, it's if you're energetic about something and you like what you're doing, then that resonates with people. Mm. They want to help you.
Totally, man. Totally.
See, isn't that like what's fucking, ooh, look at that, she swore.
How dare you? Oh.
But just how annoyed I get at people who don't follow their passion. And I understand why, because society tells you not to dream and, you know, is that practical? And I get that part. But, you know, if only people knew that if you started being the hero of your own story, and you went out, like, that people are going to respond with enthusiasm. But most people sit there and go, oh, no, I don't know.
Yeah.
Well, I don't have themselves. any inkling to do that. And I'm like, please, please don't do that to yourself. You do know what you love.
And you're a great example of someone. There will be, and there are a lot of people that will naysay you. But you're a great example of someone that ain't no naysayer. You're a yay-sayer.
I'm a yay-sayer. As soon as someone tells me they've done something great, I go, oh, it's so good.
Yeah.
And then what's going to happen? And how are you going to do it? Like, I actually want to spend time on what they're doing. So, yes, I'm not a naysayer. Unless they're a little bit, like, egotistical about what they're going to do, I bring them down a notch or two and go, I want to talk about your plan. What's that based on? I feel like I do that sometimes.
So, we spoke about the heroes that we wanted to be when we were younger,
yeah.
But I find the people that were my heroes when I was younger aren't my heroes today. Mm-hmm. And I feel like my heroes today have, like, a part of them or what they gave me is, like, who they were has become a part of me. It's not necessarily what they said or what they did, although that's a part of it, but it's like a aspect of their personality is like rubbed off, and it's like they resonate you so much that a lot of your behavior becomes like them. Have you guys had anyone that you've gone, like, I think it's more a mentor might be the word.
Oh, mate. Mm. And as part of the hero's journey, one of the stages is you have to meet the mentor.
Wow.
So as you go through this journey in every story, you always find, like, look, Star Wars, Luke Skywalker meets Obi-Wan Kenobi, right? Yeah. There's always the mentor that comes in as part of your hero's story. I've mentioned him all the time. It was Jim Steins and Paul Curry from the Reach Foundation.
Tell us more about Paul Curry just quickly, because we hear about Jim Steins a lot, but I don't remember any stories about Paul Curry. What's he like?
Okay, so this is a youth organization. So, but what they were doing was doing really like emotional intelligence, self-awareness workshops, and very much like acting. You had to be like really authentic in the way that you would stand in a room and be yourself. And Paul Curry was a film director and still is to this day. But back then he had his own acting school. And so combine sports, therapy really, and as a teacher, Jim Steins was, but Paul Curry was the person that would get you to explore the human spirit. So my fascination with the edges and the darkness and the lightness of your soul and your spirit and your mind and your body comes from Paul Curry.
Cool.
Great.
Yeah. So that is interesting because he gets the name because he's the hero in the media.
Yeah. That's awesome. I like him. Self-exploration is a wonderful thing. Anyone that's brave enough now to explore themselves fearlessly is what I term to be a hero.
Do you know, I just realized, you know how I was explaining that about him? That's what I do. I've never ever put that down as that's how I do it. Does that make sense?
Part of him is rubbed off.
100%. Now that you said it, I was like, I should start describing that's what I love in life, but I love that in him. Anyway, I just caught myself.
That's great.
Yeah, yeah.
It's because it's your nature as well. Your nature is very much like his nature like that.
Yeah. I want to sit down and have a conversation and I want to go deep into it, you know, and I want to stand in a room and help people facilitate that because when it's expansion to me.
Yeah.
You expand.
So you feel good about, or you feel good in a state of growth.
Yeah, you are a limitless being, and if you are, like I was almost thinking about lately, just saying to people, you're an idiot. You know how I always have to be really positive about who I am and the work? Sometimes that's what happens. I think it's a belief that I have to be really positive. But from now on, I'm just going to say to people who go, self-development or human development work, I'm going to be like, you're an idiot. Why wouldn't you explore that?
Sure, that's what you feel right about doing. Do it.
Just to challenge people, you know, I really believe in authentic connection, and it makes you more of a hero to know yourself.
Yeah, oh, babe, I'm all up for that. Anything that tools that shake people out of their state. That's good. That's a good thing because so many people are, and I am too, in different ways. That's why we always kind of start to form some kind of rigidity in our lives, don't we? But to stay in that constant state of flux is why it's good having freaks like you around just challenging constantly.
Why does it have to be that way? Yeah.
It's good asking questions. But yeah, it's fascinating. What about Jim? So, like, this is just me being curious. Like,
I'll do this back to you too.
I've heard a lot about Jim and when he came into your, and he told you, why don't you tell the story when he, said you're being selfish. I love that story.
Oh,
cool. I don't think I know it.
He called me a few things over the years. Remind me.
It was when you were having problems at Reach and you'd blame your family passing away.
Oh, yeah. So both him and Paul Curry and Jim Steins were doing a session. So all of us were sitting around and the ability to stand up in front of a group is also and express how you're feeling. The pros and cons of it is you watch human spirit and all that stuff that I thought was enlightening before, but it can also be a part of, if a person has a pattern, it can be also self-indulgent. And that's why some people go, I don't want to go to that because it's not necessarily authentic. So you're referring to a moment where Paul and Jim, my heroes, told me that I was selfish and being self-indulgent. And I remember it just being like gutted.
Because, what were you doing?
Because I was really, and then let's see if this makes sense. I was really sad about my parents dying. And at the time I was really struggling with it. And my mum had only died a couple of years before, but for some reason it was everything I spoke about, and then I didn't have to take responsibility. So there were things that were occurring in my life, like I was taking heaps of drugs, like smoking bongs even. And so when I was told to
sick bro,
and then I was told to turn up to when I was told to turn up for work on time or do whatever I needed, I would just be irresponsible about it. And so they were like, you're using the death of your parents now, and you're stuck in the belief that you're a victim and you're being selfish. Yeah. And I was like, you mean I'm not allowed to be sad about my parents? Instead of seeing, really, thank God they said it to me, because it had shaped, it was probably a call to adventure, right?
Mm.
Because I could have kept going down the path of not following my bliss, not answering my call to adventure.
Numbing yourself.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
It is interesting.
Because we don't like hearing you're selfish or self-obsessed or not self-obsessed.
You're a victim.
Yeah.
Ugh,
like something, because there are times when you can grieve, but maybe you've been doing it for a bit too long and they thought, serving you, this pattern or something or other.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so great to have people like that to call you out in your own bullshit.
Yeah. Yeah.
No wonder they're such heroes too, because heroes kind of care about you, don't they?
And it's truly, they've only got the license, I feel, because they've done it themselves to themselves.
Yeah.
Like if they hadn't, you wouldn't, I don't reckon, even like it, because you would sense insincerity in them.
Well, they care. They really care.
Yeah, exactly.
Think about when you're glad somebody, you realize, you look back and you go, oh, I was probably in a victim state for too long there. What can I do about it? Mm. And you're glad people who are around you. You know, I guess that would be like if you're a major drug taker and everyone pulls a...
An intervention
on you, you know. That would, someone tried to do that to me once. I nearly punched on.
What happened?
Well, my friends, I was taking so many party drugs, I always did it around Christmas time. It was my saddest period, but I wasn't conscious of it. I was just like making everyone take drugs. Well, quite aggressive, but thought it was funny. Party girl. Like I really did. Yeah. And so then they were getting affected by it. So one of them said to me, you know, we're thinking about holding an intervention with you. And I was like, pfft. And then I looked at both of them and I could just see their seriousness of, you are out of control. And if you don't pull it together, you're going to lose us or something in your life. And it was enough to make me just be like, fuck you. There's nothing wrong with me. But of course there was.
Yeah.
So I remember just being really angry, but it was enough again to make me go, you know what? This isn't healthy.
Mm.
I'm taking drugs to feel something. It will numb something.
Mm. Mm.
So it's pretty funny. You do know I have the friends that were going to do it for me. Imagine sitting there.
Yeah.
All these people sitting around you about to have an intervention.
That's funny.
Oh,
it's amazing. I love, like you said, seeing how these heroes have changed you. And I'm wondering, Jez, like, I know you went overseas and you met a lot of cool people.
Mm. Yeah, they were mine. Yeah, Evelyn.
We interviewed her.
The Holy Three. The Three Disciples. Is Evelyn, Justin, who we had on as well, yes. And Russell.
Can we get Russell on? Jeremy.
He's having a baby.
Oh, hang on. We had a workshop with him, so that's all right.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
What?
But just because they were cool to my adventure. I had this sense I needed to wake up. And I wanted a greater sense of more. I wanted to return to myself.
What does that mean, returning to yourself?
Be calm, stop chasing, stop looking, just be, find within for my happiness and stillness. Surrender and kill my insatiable desire for more.
Yeah.
Which
I think a lot of people really need to learn that.
Yeah.
Including myself.
As well as a bunch of other feelings like that and around that. And kind of just return home. And then there's one guy, Justin, in Hawaii after like the third day. And then we stayed in touch. But it was just a few things. He triggered it initially. Then about a month later in St. Lucia with Evelyn, where she like really woke me the fuck up. And she came out of nowhere, my Airbnb host, mate. And she was wonderful. And then Russell in London felt like the third and final one for kind of returning how
that's Russell Brand, in case anyone's wondering.
Yeah. for how I can apply what I've found to a bigger audience, or like my work, how I can take this state of enlightenment I found and apply it to work.
How'd they make you feel?
They made me feel fucking not judged at all. Not a bit judged. Open ears, really intently listening, look me in the eye, like, particularly Russell. No one else looks you in the eye like he does. He just wiggles his head. It like unsettles a lot of people.
Because you do that, do you know?
I don't wiggle my head, do I? I don't.
No.
Maybe. I mean, like, I tried taking it on after I met him because I was like, man, that's a good technique. And I was just like, and I felt like it was a natural thing to just try to snake your way into their soul.
I'm going to really look at you. Look at now.
But I remember this one time he did it in the cab. We were driving somewhere. And he was doing it to the fucking cab driver, and the cab, like, he started just saying all these things like, and what do you feel about that? What do you mean? Like, and just like really getting involved and like wiggling his head into the front seat. And the cab driver, after like probably after about the third question, he goes, "What's happening?" He just said, "What's happening? What's happening? What's happening?"
He must
like he was in his own car with him. He was the driver, and he just goes, "What's happening?" Like,
that is so cool. Because if you think about that driver, he's like getting his mojo completely.
I just flipped, just totally. Well, and that's why he's so good at it. Like, yeah. He really just flips people, which is a great way to get into the soul. Like, navigate through the desert, like. That's what I reckon. It's like, I've been thinking a lot about this analogy recently about going into the desert, like how Jesus only found God in the desert, and how like religion and a lot of things have spiritual, you find spirit, your God or yourself or whatever it is in these pyramids, and how there's...
What do you mean by pyramids?
Like a pyramid structure of leaders and... like any kind of organization.
So like the apex.
Yeah. And how that kind of blocks the sun. If the sun's God, it kind of like blocks and masks.
Oh, so you're talking about you find it in nature.
You find it in nature. Okay. Yeah.
I got confused about
yeah, sorry. Yeah, yeah.
I was like, why?
Yeah,
am I
yeah which is good to ask a question because a lot of my references are from all over the shop. So that's good. But then the desert particularly is great. And what I mean by the desert and where I found myself in the desert was when I abandoned everything, all my comforts, all my desires day to day, everything, stopped everything and just walked into the great unknown and the great barren land of no support, no love, no anything.
Where was this?
Just in myself for every day of the trip, where I made it up every day for the 6 months of travel when I met these people. And it, like, yeah, it's more of an analogy. I didn't physically go into the desert.
Yeah, that's why I was like, I'm with you, but I understand now the metaphor of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, so you just, I've got an idea of a thing that's giving me comfort. All right, I'm not going to do that now. I've got something else that I want to do. I'm not going to do it. You know, keep continually reshaping and shaking off all your fucking, your patterns,
stuff.
Your patterns and your stuff. And then you end up bare and really, like, I got on some very intense spiritual, battles or confrontations when I was in that space, because I felt like I was so close to the sun, so close to the devil or the darkness, or, you know, like a better analogy is just a coin. There's darkness in me and there's lightness in me, and it's a coin and both are me. So the evilest evil is me, the lightest of light is me.
But the thing about coin is you can't separate the heads from the tails, so you can't have lightness without darkness.
Yes. Yep.
So
yep. They're attached.
That one implies the other.
Yes.
So it's like how people say that the opposite of life is death. It's not, death and life are the same thing.
Exactly.
It's like death is just the ending of life. It's not the opposite. It's a part of it.
It's exactly. And I love that, because that gave me so much peace over the evil or the selfish thoughts or whatever you want to call them. Parasitic energies that eat up and not create. And I was like, fuck, that's me, man. That means I'm in control. Whoa, that means, like, I'm the boss of this. You know, like, and and you find a huge, tremendous sense of empowerment when you realize that, fuck, I can control this. I can manufacture my energy. If I want to be, like, light and create and laughter and fun, I can do that. If I wanted to do this, I can do that. And then,
beautiful.
But I find, and to a different extent, like, you start falling asleep again, or you start sedating yourself again through the rhythm and the mundane and the repetition of life, you know, like even just driving a car to work, for example, that's a repetition pattern that breeds non-creativity. I mean, does that make sense? Or is that a bit silly?
Yeah, I get. Well, I've been.
When I think it comes from you talking about the internal, what I'm hearing, when you go back internal, it's awesome. But the external.
Yeah.
It's the adventure. It's like when you come back to your everyday life, it doesn't feel like you're. Is that what you feel like now that you're back? You feel like you're back to the ordinary world?
Yeah, a bit. But I also like it, and I know it's the real world, and the world that I want to. The challenge is more to refresh that daily, and go on away a little breaks. Like I went away on the weekend in nature, and that's the world of good tea, doesn't it?
Oh, doesn't it?
Completely.
Reset, yeah.
Mm.
Is it a challenge to keep that stuff inside updated each day? I don't know if it is. If you look at the language,
yeah.
The challenge, question. You know, like
it's all about attention.
Yeah.
What are you paying attention to? It's like when you're
just
out.
Just to grab hold of it. It's like, I actually think you do that every day, the attention. It's just that need for more or better that gets in the way of it again.
Mm.
Sorry.
Peace is what I'm craving the most right now, is make me a channel of peace, like stillness and peace. But anyway, you go.
What's behind? Oh, I was just going to say that I've been reading Mindside. A lecture where Jack Kornfield, who's a Buddhist teacher, spoke to a neuroscientist called Dan Siegel, and it's awesome. This is one, and I got some really cool meditation breakthroughs from hearing Dan Siegel speak, which we can talk about a different time. But one thing that you were talking about, which I thought it's all about awareness, and what Dan Siegel was saying is that our brain is literally wired by what we pay attention to. So when you're overseas, you're paying attention to these new things, these open experiences, you know, the sense of adventure, and then you come back here and it becomes normal. But if there's a way we can pay attention where you like know, you know, the peace is here right now, you know, look at things in a way where it's everything becomes magical again. It's like you're already there, you know, like you can get into a headspace when you go, you know, I'm gonna pay attention to what's good about this moment or interesting. It's like you can be walking down the street and like look at everyone at once and see that everyone weaving in out of how they're walking along the path, it's quite a pretty pattern. And you can see how they're kind of
that's
come
true,
together
right?
in a
really
space
true.
Or like one thing I've been trying at work lately is to really practice being present with people and like really look at people when I'm serving them food or smiling, you know, like that feeling.
Mate, I love that. Good on you.
But
because you fucking know that connection when you feel other people doing it too.
Because they smile, they mirror you.
Yeah.
When you smile at someone, you can feel them smiling back. You can
and
see
it's
your face.
It's a beautiful way to exist, like for your sake, more than anyone. You know,
that's good.
Yeah. I was just noticing that you got a bit emotional there before.
Yeah, with peace.
Yeah. Why? And don't get me wrong, we don't have to go into all of it. I'm just, you know, if we're talking about what's real for us, this conversation only triggers me to say, you know, what do you want to share? What is that emotion about as we talk here that would be, I don't know, part of our conversation? But I think sometimes as heroes, we talk about that conversation of, does a hero express themselves? You know, the what's out there is they're not actually emotional or have a problem, and that view of what a hero is never really shows us that. But I don't think that's true. In my books, a hero is someone who, that expresses their emotions, that goes through the darkness. So I don't know. I just felt like maybe
you have to know that they're real.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was mainly feeling one in peace for someone else in my life right now that's needs it tremendously. That's why I feel sad about it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't feel okay to go into detail about
it.
No,
you don't. I don't actually want you to. It was more just to acknowledge it. It's sitting there.
That's what it was. That was where it was coming from. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, if we're running a podcast, you know, it's like I can see you tearing up, and I go, talk about a real conversation. You know. It's a beautiful thing to acknowledge that and go, are you okay, Jez?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I'm crying a lot at the moment. Everything will be all right ultimately, but like you realize, I suppose, when more heavy situations happen to someone you love, the how much you love them and what's important and how you know, peace is good.
Thanks for sharing it. Because you do. It's just sitting there. You can, you know, can feel the pain in it. And you just, you know, you go, well, here we are running a podcast and there's what's real. Mm. There's the conversation. Mm. How's this person going? You know, what? Where's their hero characteristics? Are they dealing with it?
Yeah, I don't want to talk about it right now. That's sorry. Right. Yeah.
One of my heroes, Jack Kornfield, who I just spoke about before, Dan Siegel was telling a story about how when they were in a cab, an ambulance went past, and this was Dan Siegel, like he was using example for, like, you know, where your attention is, and he said that Dan said the first thing that came to his head is, because he's studied medicine, is he was thinking like he was empathizing with the ambulance drivers and thinking about, oh, what medicine are they going to use? How are they going to treat him? And then he looked at Jack, and Jack was just, I really hope that person's okay, to the victim. And it was sort of that idea of compassion or empathy and just wishing well for other people. It's a human quality. And I think that's quite heroic for you to show your emotion in a public forum. And it doesn't matter what the details are.
No, it really doesn't.
In our media, it's people don't show emotion like this. We don't show that we're real people. And even you posted on Instagram picture of you crying a month ago or whatever. And it was just, I'm crying and this is, sometimes I'm sad. And it was you. And I thought that was heroic on social media because no one does that. We're presenting this projection of who we are. That's not realistic. And
that's a great example actually for what I wanted to crack with doing it. It was like, I feel sad right now. And then I looked at my phone and I was like, fuck, I should just take a photo and post it. Like, why wouldn't I? Like, I'm just sharing with people what I am like right now. And then that was as simple as it was. And that's why I said in the caption, sometimes I feel sad. This is one of those times or whatever. But I just want to normalize our ability to be free with ourselves. We're in public space. And I think we are by having these conversations, but
I think that
was also a darker, heavier place for me because it was, when I really start to go into these deeper meditations, sometimes I've realized, you know, as anyone that meditates, you realize you become everything that is, or like you have a connection with everything that is. So you feel like all the light and love and beauty of nature and the world is you, but all the sins and darkness and suffering is you. So you have this tremendous sense of connection to it all, and then therefore you have a tremendous sense of connection to all the actions that you can perceive around you and that's happening in right now in the world. And so that's what my example of, like, when you come close, too close to that deep connection or truth is what I see as. You can't last there long, you know. It's like an acid trip. You could slip down one way or the other very easily.
Yeah, that's interesting. I was just thinking, like, we're talking about heroes. Why do you think people like Batman so much? No, this is a serious question. It sounds like
he's a normal everyday man.
Because he doesn't have powers.
He's a protector.
He has this.
He's gonna.
But he's also got this
baddies.
Dark side to him too. Batman has that dark human aspect to him where he's not, he's just a rich guy that kind of wants revenge
for
his parents. I think that's why
don't judge a book by its cover there, is it?
That's interesting. Why do you like Batman?
I'm not a huge Batman fan. I was just
massive
like,
fan. I love Dark Knight Rises.
Yeah. I prefer him to Superman tenfold.
Yeah.
Superman's kind of
Or is that just because we love the movies better than Superman?
Yeah, probably. Yeah, definitely. He's more badass.
Well, you know, that's interesting.
He's homemade.
Every superhero has its kryptonite or its darkness, isn't it? Like, even if we think about what we're even going through then, just then, like, I was looking at you going, well, you know, there is some darkness there, but they have a weakness. And, it's so fascinating to think about heroes have kryptonite.
Yeah.
That's my kryptonite.
But then on the other hand, like, I feel... Something Joe Rogan says, so Joe Rogan has a podcast, he was talking about how most of the comedians, he knows had fucked up childhoods, and most of them were also mentally unstable.
Mm.
But that's what makes them so funny. So it's also like, is your kryptonite not the thing that empowers you? And I think, Jez, you're someone that's so creative, but you're so emotional. But I think that's why you can put the two together. If that makes sense. I think you utilize the fact that you get so emotional and passionate about things into your work.
Yeah, good.
So it's kind of that.
Yeah, well, another way of putting this is your gift is your curse and your curse is your gift.
Mm.
What do you think of that?
Yeah.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to a balance, and does it not?
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, you don't even have to see it as that your gift is a curse at all, but sometimes it can be.
It can be, exactly.
Right? It can be if you allow it to be.
Yeah. The coin.
The coin again. Isn't that interesting? And the hero story always tells you of the darkness and what they've had to learn, that when they go into the fear, into the cave that holds the sword, and this is where the treasure is that you seek. Mm. This is where you learn most about you. You have to slay your dragon, and the hero's journey stories.
Mm.
You always have to face a fear within you.
Let's play a game, a round table of examples within your own life where, because I'll start with mine, but of where your gift is your curse and when you can do that. Because my gift is sometimes that I passionately care about our people and their well-being, because I can see they're being lied to in mass amounts and they're being manipulated and disempowered. And because I felt all those things. So I feel like I care a lot. But then sometimes when I care too much, I get miserable because I realize that there's so many people to fix by my standards, which are just mine anyway. They're not necessarily the universal right standards at all. But so I get into a place of sadness because it's like it's too overwhelming. and so then that's my definitely a curse, because I'm useless to the fucking world when I'm like that. But then when I channel it right, it can I'm in control of it, or I'm empowered by it somehow.
How?
When I relax, I think when I just like be at peace in myself and start from that starting block, then I have a moment of inspiration, create, spit it out, done. That's when I'm powerful. And it's effortless in that. Like, I suppose it's like any music, like John, any musician. Like when they create, like John Lennon, he wrote songs in like 5 seconds. And it's because he was in that state. I think that's my example.
Yeah, it's a great one. You got any yours? Yeah.
I think mine is I'm pretty much happy all the time. And content, whereas that can sometimes be a detriment because it's like I'm just content that I don't get things done.
You're just sitting in your room all day smiling.
So pretty much, it's like I've got a happy where I am, and then it's like balancing like, no, it's so the striving. I'm not a striver.
That's so funny, man.
Whereas I think me and you are kind of opposite in that way. It's not that I don't let things affect me. That sounds like a real active thing. It's just I think I'm very... Like we said on the podcast the other day, which...
You're very awake to things.
Yeah. But then sometimes it's like, well, I know that I'm probably going to be about the same level of happiness no matter what I do. So, like, does it really need...
Which is true.
The people that achieve a stupid amount of their life, they probably put heaps of pressure on themselves.
Yeah.
So that's mine. It's like finding the balance between setting goals and working
things. God, don't go down that path.
That's so funny.
And... sometimes it's like, no, I need to be a bit more like...
That's a great one, Ryan. That's so funny.
interesting, like I think like one of my heroes, Jim Steins, his gift was his curse and the end of him. So he died of cancer, and he was constantly doing things for everybody. You know, he saved the Melbourne Football Club. Huge, and that's massive to save a football club.
Mm.
And at the same time, he was, handing over the Reach Foundation to all of us. He was a property owner. He was constantly making money. You know, I really admired that businessman, that he was always in 10 different things, and for his family. So I feel like that's what I learned from Jim too, was I get caught up in what I believe I should be, because I've grown up around what I love about him. But his curse was also the end of him, because he constantly... I think the cancer is that you haven't resolved a few emotional issues in there. And so he was constantly giving out, and it's what made him sick.
Mm.
So I think about my gift and my curse is I'm so visionary. I can see it. I've got a gift of prophecy in my mind. It's big. It's we've put it together. It's already occurred. But in that, it's too much at all at once. And it's quality over quantity sometimes, you know. So it's, you know, and you see me, it's like too many things going at once.
Yeah.
So you, which is not going to help the vision come alive either.
Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Because it's like that your state of genius in the sense of having that ability to foresee and be a futurist in your reality of your organization and the world.
I want to put on big events. I want to, do movements.
But it's something that you can, the power of that is you can't really own it for too long. You can only channel it. That's what the Greeks talked about it. Like you can channel it. It's not yours. And then by having that lack of attachment to it, I think that's how they managed it much better than we do nowadays, where we have attachment to it. And then so for it, it forms part of our ego and our representation of who we are online. Maybe, I don't know.
I'm interested in the word detachment of late. I sent you a text message on the weekend, or maybe yesterday, of what detachment and discernment is and how important it is as being part of who you are to let go or detach, but also have faith in discernment.
Mm.
What does detachment mean to you?
Detachment to my patterns in my mind or my thinking thoughts or my own dogma.
Mm, good one.
It's actually something that Jack Kornfield said the other day in his podcast. Sorry, I just love him. He's like the chamomile.
Who is it, Jack?
Jack Kornfield. Yeah. His podcast is great.
Everyone, like, get out your phone right now.
He's the human equivalent of chamomile tea, is something Duncan trusts.
But I don't like the chamomile tea.
Oh, it's relaxing. Okay, she's got a relaxing voice. Yeah, but he was talking about how the word, everyone talks about Buddhism in the terms of attachment. So you attach yourself to things, then that gives you suffering because you're afraid you're going to lose it.
Mm.
Or because you want a certain thing, you attach yourself to an idea, and then that's suffering because you don't have it now. But he was saying that the more accurate word is clinging. So he's talking about you want healthy attachment to your relationships and your friends and your family.
Yeah, yeah, good.
But you don't want to cling and hold on to them.
That's a much better way to
There we go.
And that's where this idea of impermanence comes from. The fact that if you do try and hold on to something and control it and manipulate it, when it's gone, like you can't hold on to anything. We're going to die. Everything that I see in front of me right now, one day is not going to exist. And that's just the reality of life, where it's like
people cling on to their family, to religion dogma, cling on to
relationships,
their jobs,
is huge
relationships
jobs.
With people.
The image of themselves is a huge one, and that's something
I think. Yeah, good. That's a bit more mysterious, isn't it? A bit harder. More like slippy. You can't really quite see it. You can see someone clinging on to someone else, but you can't see you clinging on to your own thing as well.
I think when you're in it, you can, but when you can separate yourself from your idea of yourself,
yes.
So, you know, I'm Ryan Hyde and I do a podcast and I have friends that are like this and, you know, the whole story. And it's taking that less seriously. And
cool.
Although I love you and I appreciate you and it's not detached as if I don't care emotionally. It's just saying that when you're not here anymore, I'll let that go or give you space. I don't know. Does that
make sense? No, totally know what you mean, man. Where else are we going to go clinging? Because I think that's such a good lesson.
I think that was it.
Yeah.
But that idea of holding, like, even I like the image of, like, if you think I'm holding my fist and the tension, it's like,
yeah,
it's a very good metaphor.
It's very good.
But you can also be attached to something and slip off. Like, it's.
Yeah. And that's the thing with, like, attachment to someone you love is actually, it's healthy or to, you know, because it's like you love them and they love you. And so if something bad happens, it's not clinging to them to want to help them out. It's like, just because I love you and I'll, you know.
But if you go, I think you should be a certain way and you're not meeting my expectation.
Yeah.
Then that's that. Not loving. That grasping that, you know. I like one of the ideas they call Buddhism.
Yeah,
I've done
that.
I guess you're flexible with it too, right?
Yeah, it's flexibility.
It's flexibility with it. Because if you think about a hero that you admire, of course they're attached. But they're also able to detach and let things go and not cling. There's a guy that I admire, Robert Fritz, and he did a research on interviewing 1001 successful people. Cool. And he asked them, what made your success? And after each one of them came back to him, he found that they said, we didn't know how we were going to get to where we were going to get to. We just knew why. We knew our end result, and we never steered from the end result. So, you know, you think about attachment and clinging, you know, is the end result necessary? But maybe it's knowing your why, but also there's a little bit of a twist in there. If you still have an end point,
yeah,
but you're also able to figure out how you're going to get there or how it's going to look.
Interesting.
I've thought about this a lot, and one thing I've come up with, those people, is, tell me if I'm wrong.
Don't know.
But they probably loved the process of failing there. Whereas I feel like what happens here is people attach to that end result or cling to this image. But then it's the image they want, and it's, you kind of, I think, like we talked about with flow and doing what you're passionate about, it's those people would fail and fail and fail, but it's the process. They're process-driven as well.
Because I think, you'd be pretty miserable if you're not in love with the process, wouldn't you?
Yeah, because I remember when I first started podcasting, I was disappointed that we weren't, like, not this podcast, a different one I started, that it wasn't going as well as it did at the start.
You can be honest, like, right? It was this one, wasn't it?
No.
Is it more me or Jeremy that you're disappointed with?
Both of you get lifting it. Oh. But, yeah, that process, like, you got to enjoy failing, because it doesn't matter what you do. If you've got an end result in mind, it's not going to go perfect. And I think if you don't attach yourself to, like, this is the exact way it's going to go, then you'll be fine.
I agree. Yeah. And it's just very much a step-by-step, isn't it, troll and learn.
Well, they're legs, aren't they? The legs of the trip. Sorry, I was so in my own head as you were talking.
Yeah.
But like when you said, I'm going overseas, and you get to one destination, and then you're going to have to decide on the next step after that, after you've had enough. Mm. So that's a little bit of you love the process. In my mind, it was helpful just then. Not sure it was helpful for you, but it was for me.
I recommend, if anyone's on Instagram right now, go to Niche. I'm absolutely in love with this person called Niche. They post really cool photos of people, artists and stuff, saying really cool quotes.
How do you spell Niche?
It's __ and NITCH. This one is like, sometimes it's a form of love just to talk to somebody that you have nothing in common with and still be fascinated in their presence. Little things like that. Such good quotes from interesting people. You know, that was completely off track.
Good, but
it's not random. I mean, if we started off with heroes.
They're all my heroes on that.
A hero is somebody you just admire for something that they do.
Yes.
That's my theory. You admire them and you wish you could do it. Or you admire it and you respect that they do it. You don't have to have done it, but you might follow in their footsteps, which I can think of many heroes that I have spoken about in these podcasts that I've followed in their footsteps. But you can also admire somebody that you're never going to do it. You're just into it.
Mm.
What about you?
I like that. Mm. It's nice to just look at something and go, that's true. Moving on.
So I think this has been a pretty cool conversation about heroes, and I don't know, I just want to keep saying thank you to you two, because you're pretty brave in your own ways to put your bare souls and your own thoughts and intricacies of your life onto podcasts. So maybe I acknowledge
you
both
too.
For being, thank you.
I acknowledge you.
I acknowledge me. Thank you, Jeremy.
For doing the same thing. I do. I honour it.
Why not? And I think that's maybe even what we're trying to get people to do, is maybe see more of the hero in others who are having real conversations, right? I call it authentic connection. If you look at yourself and be real about what's true for you, you can then spend way more time connecting with other people and the world around you. And I think if you want to check out more of what we do at Collective Potential, go to www.collectivepotential.com.au and check out one of our workshops coming up called Catalyst. You know, that's really about getting the clarity, looking at direction, but there's plenty more to come. So,
even just come meet some nice people.
That's it.
Thanks for listening.
Might meet your wife.
That's why I'm doing it, let's be honest.